Hello, everyone. This is Joel Maxwell, Joel Wagner, and DJ Sally P, Sally Perrine, here with Peace Radio. And Sally, Joel, what do we have on the agenda today?
We have a pre-recorded interview.
With a fellow named Ali, who's from Iran but currently living in India.
Okay, so we'll be playing that in a bit. We do have some info from Code Pink, wonderful women, radical women who keep us informed about sort of things, things that we need to do to keep the pressure on the Obama administration. A couple of articles about resistance to military school recruitment, thanks to Bertie Waddell for sending those on. Of course, our usual movie reviews, maybe even a book review if I can figure out what to say. Chris Hedges' article about Afghanistan and a bit of info about Darja Mail, who will be here in October. So,
yeah, well, it sounds good. And a song by Kay Nan that was played
right.
on Democracy Now!, but
yeah,
he's a very
Somali
interesting guy. Yeah,
musician, yeah. Currently living, I guess, in Toronto, but
yeah.
touring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. Headlines for the first hour. The U.S. military in Afghanistan has stopped releasing figures showing how many militants have been killed in fighting with U.S.-led forces, officials said Friday, indicating the number of insurgents killed has little relevance to impacting the lives of Afghans, according to Rear Admiral Gregory Smith. Smith sent an order last month to NATO and U.S. forces, blocking the military from releasing details on militant death tolls and providing estimates instead, arguing that the goal of security operations in an insurgency is to separate the people from the insurgents. Smith, who is revamping communications for the U.S. military and the NATO-led International Security Assistance Force in Afghanistan, stressed the U.S.-led military operations were not aimed at killing insurgents. The move comes as President Barack Obama's administration is shifting the U.S. war strategy in Afghanistan toward enhancing the safety of civilians, seeking to stem support for the deadly Taliban insurgency. Obama has dispatched 21,000 fresh troop reinforcements to Afghanistan as international forces battle a mounting Taliban insurgency. By year's end, some 68,000 U.S. forces are set to operate in Afghanistan. Meanwhile, Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki hinted that U.S. troops may remain in Iraq beyond the end of 2011, the deadline set under a bilateral agreement reached last year. Pursuant to the agreement in 2011, the military presence of the Americans will take an end in Iraq, Maliki told a U.S. think tank. Nevertheless, if the Iraqi forces required further training and further support, we shall examine this then, at that time, based on the needs of Iraq. I am sure that the prospects and the desire of such cooperation is found among both parties, Maliki added in Arabic at the U.S. Institute of Peace, according to a translation of his remarks by an interpreter. His comments, which came less than a month after U.S. troops pulled out of Iraqi cities and towns, signaled a shift, as Iraqi and U.S. officials have insisted the December 31, 2011 deadline is a firm one. Speaking with Maliki by his side at the White House Rose Garden on Wednesday, President Obama again insisted that the United States would fulfill its commitment to remove all of its troops from Iraq by 2011. In other war news, small, remotely piloted planes are now used mainly to gather intelligence and fire missiles at insurgents. But over the next several decades, the Air Force envisions building larger ones that could do the work of bombers and cargo planes, and even tiny ones that could spy inside a room. In a report released Thursday laying out a flight plan for developing pilotless systems, the Air Force also said it could eventually field swarms of drones to attack enemy targets. And it will have to be ready to defend against the same threat, which could become another inexpensive way for insurgents to attack American forces. Colonel Eric Mathewson, who directs the Air Force Task Force on Pilotless Aerial Systems, said in an interview that the service sketched its vision to encourage contractors and university researchers to help create the technologies. So the money machine keeps on rolling.
Do they really think the same people throwing Molotov cocktails and IEDs are going to be building high-tech drones? I mean, it's so much more efficient just to chuck a can of gasoline with a wick in it at us.
You're not very high-tech, are you?
No. I think it's the Cold War all over again. We're all going to have a drone pointed at us.
Right.
An imaginary one.
Yeah, it's just an excuse to keep funding.
It's appalling.
the defense industry stocks up. Military contractors have already been rushing to expand in what promises to remain a prime growth area, even as the Pentagon tightens its budget. In the last decade, the use of remotely piloted planes has soared in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. The Air Force and the Central Intelligence Agency have fielded Cessna-sized drones called Predators and Reapers to send back video of insurgent activity and mount missile attacks. Army units have used hard-launched models, which look like toy planes, to peer over hills or buildings. Other drones monitor the seas and eavesdrop from high altitudes, much like the storied U-2 spy planes. Top Bush administration officials in 2002 debated testing the Constitution by sending American troops into the suburbs of Buffalo to arrest a group of men suspected of plotting with al-Qaeda, according to former administration officials. Some of the advisors to President George W. Bush, including Vice President Dick Cheney, argued that a president had the power to use the military on domestic soil to sweep up the terrorism suspects who came to be known as the Lackawanna Six and declare them enemy combatants. Mr. Bush ultimately decided against the proposal to use military force. A decision to dispatch troops into the streets to make arrests has few precedents in American history, as both the Constitution and subsequent laws restrict the military from being used to conduct domestic raids and seize property. The Fourth Amendment bans unreasonable searches and seizures without probable cause, and the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878 generally prohibits the military from acting in a law enforcement capacity. In the discussions, Mr. Cheney and others cited an October 23, 2001 memorandum from the Justice Department that, using a broad interpretation of presidential authority, argued that the domestic use of the military against al-Qaeda would be legal because it served a national security rather than a law enforcement purpose. Quote, "The president has ample constitutional and statutory authority to deploy the military against international or foreign terrorists operating within the United States," the memorandum said. The memorandum, not surprisingly written by the lawyers John Yoo and Robert L. Delahunty, was directed to Alberto R. Gonzalez, then the White House counsel, who had asked the department about a president's authority to use the military to combat terrorism activities in the United States. The memorandum was declassified in March, but the White House debate about the Lackawanna group is the first evidence that top American officials, after the attacks of September 11, 2001, actually considered using the document to justify deploying the military into an American town to make arrests. And I think that will do it for our headlines for the first hour now.
That's about depressing enough.
There is
Let's
more.
Let's have some depressing music.
I'm sure there's more.
The next hour.
No, now we're going to listen to the Tom Tom Club.
Okay.
Here we go.
Down, 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 down.
That's right, girl.
entire event took place in a bar. Where'd the kid go? Is he in a funk? It's not your fault they fill your head with junk, 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 junk.
That was the Tom Tom Club with a song called Love Wave. And I'm playing this because I happened to find it unopened in my house as I was walking out the door. And I love the Tom Tom Club. And I don't actually know where it came from.
So if you're missing a Tom Tom Club CD and Jill's been at your house.
Anyway, it's bringing me lots of joy, so...
And a fitting follow-up to that, to the bummer news, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So yesterday was a global day of action demanding an end to the persecution and imprisonment of opposition activists in Iran following the country's disputed presidential election. And I think there were protests around the world for that. I didn't see a lot about them in the paper or anything, but that's not surprising.
Well, no, we wouldn't care.
No.
What's Paris Hilton been doing?
Right. And is Michael Jackson really dead, right?
Yeah. As many as 80 cities around the world participated in the Global Day of Action for Human Rights in Iran. Hundreds protested in Tehran as well, where national police and pro-government militia attacked and scattered them. The organizer of the day was a group called United for Iran, which is a nonpartisan collaborative of individuals and human rights organizers. The organization's goal is to condemn the widespread and systematic violations of the Iranian people's human rights. As a little background, Iran's 10th presidential election was held on June 12th, with incumbent Mahmoud Ahmadinejad running against three challengers. The next morning, the Islamic Republic News Agency, Iran's official news agency, announced that with two-thirds of the votes counted, Ahmadinejad had won the election with 63% of the votes cast, and that Mir Hossein Mousavi had received 33% of the votes cast. The European Union, United Kingdom, and several Western countries expressed concern over alleged irregularities during the vote, and many analysts and journalists from the United States, Europe, and other Western-based media voiced doubts about the authenticity of the results. Hundreds of thousands of Iranians denounced the vote as fraudulent and held protests until a crackdown by security forces left at least 20 dead, and hundreds were imprisoned. Last week, Jerry Swenson, who is one of the co-hosts of the alternate Sunday Peace Radio show, and myself were able to interview an Iranian named Ali, who is currently living outside of Iran, about the continuing protests in the country. Ali still has family members in the country. And in the first clip from this interview, Ali is talking about daily life in Iran and about some of the causes of the protests, saying that it's not just about the election.
Just think about it. For example, like one officer telling you, okay, you can't go there, you can't go there, you can't go with girls, you can't drive the car because of this, something like that. After all of this, you know, this is not good. This is really, really bad. And as I told you, it was about the election. Some of the people in America think this is family war or something like this between Democrats and Republic Party, but this is not. This is a war between people and the government. The government which want to tell us to what we should wear, what we should talk, what we should do. This is not the freedom, okay? The people of Iran, they can accept this. Most of the people in Iran, they want to have international communication with the other countries. But this government is telling us, this is your enemy. America is your enemy. England is your enemy. France is your enemy. So all over the world is our enemies. So that means we should just, close all the doors and just sit in the house. You know what I mean? Yeah. So this is not what the people want. This is not the people what the people want. The people want to have international communication with the other country, because this is very important for us. We know everything about the other countries, like as I told you before, and I'm telling you to your people right now. Most of the people in your country, even they don't know where is Iran. They just know it's in the Middle East. Yeah, just think about it. For example, like one officer telling you, okay, you can't go there, you can't go there, you can't go with girls, you can't drive the car because of this, something like that. After all of this, you know, this is not good. This is really, really bad. And as I told you, it was about the election. But right now, it's not about the election.
It's gone way beyond that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's going to be beyond that.
I understand.
But right now, it's not about the election. It's going to be beyond that.
How do you think that the populace will prevail? I mean, how will they continue making demonstrations in the streets, even if they're fired upon? Or I know that they're shouting from rooftops, Allah Akbar.
Yeah. We will continue, but not with this way. This is because they show it up. They will kill the people. Okay, this is not true. We can't just go out and I'm not in Iran. Okay, but if I would, I'm in India. But if I would, I would say to my friends to don't go out, because they will kill you. We should do something else. Like we are signing the monies, okay? We are signing the monies. Where is my vote? Or why did you kill my Neda? Why did you kill my brothers? Why did you kill my sisters? And this will help us to, tell them we don't like this government. And this is the beginning. This is the beginning. This is not. We can't say, okay, we will win after 1 month. We will win after 2 months. This is not true.
You're listening to an interview between myself and Jerry Swenson and an Iranian named Ali, who's currently living outside of Iran. In the next clip, Ali says that although the protests will continue, people will find alternative ways to resist because going into the street is too dangerous. He does think that going after oil revenue could be effective. Ali says Iranians support Mousavi because he's the only one who is willing to face up to Ahmadinejad.
As one of my friends told me, they can kill revolutionaries, but they can't kill the revolution. They can't filter. They can't cut off the internet. They can't cut off everything, but they can't cut off the God. We have God. We have the God. The God is with us. We know this because, and we are sure about this. And listen, I'm not talking about this as all of my people. If they carry on with this in this way, and your country and the other countries, like Europe country and all over the world, they just say, okay, we cannot stop them, so we should just, I don't know, you know what I mean?
You think that the world should intervene somehow in this administration?
Yeah, but like something like they shouldn't buy oil or gas or something like this, but they are buying because they need it. We know this. We know this. And if this just, you know, they carry on, they continue in this way.
Are you in favor of economic embargoes against Iran because it'll make it harder on the current regime?
No. It's not good.
My understanding is that it makes it much harder on the people in the street. The people who have power have money and they can get what they need.
Yes, exactly. This cannot help my people, okay? And the only thing can help my people is to just, cut off all the communication about the oil and gas between Iran and other countries, okay? This is the only thing that will help my people because they need, this government need the oil, need the oil money, okay? This government need the oil gas. And even if your government and the other governments don't do anything about this, my people, we decide something in outside of the Iran. We cannot go in the street of Iran, but we can cut off this connection. Even if takes, we buy a missile from black market to hit the ships and stop them to export the oil. Even if takes this, because we are about 5 million people outside of the Iran. Okay. If each one of these people spend $1 in one day, okay, in each day, okay, one, that means $5 million in each day. So this is a lot of money. We can cut off the oil connection. I'm not, as I told you, I'm not talking about this as I'm all of my people, but I think this is the only way. I don't know.
What do people think about Mousavi? Is he a good alternative?
Yeah, he's a good, because he's the only person who stand against country in Iran. He's the only important person in the Iran who stand against the government and say, not only Mousavi. Some of the people think this is only about Mousavi, but Mousavi and Karoui, these people are good. They done something very, very, very wrong long time ago. But we want to forget this. As the God say, I will forget this. I will forgive you. My people says, okay, we will forgive you. But you know, don't let us behind. Go and fight for us, because you know, this demonstration needs one leader. We need a leader, okay? Now Mousavi is our leader. We should carry on with this leader, as Napoleon Bonaparte in the France, he was the leader. That's why they successful in the revolution, because you know, in all of the revolution you should have a leader. Now he's our leader.
You're listening to an interview between myself and Jerry Swenson and Ali, who is an Iranian who's currently living in India. In the next clip and the final excerpt from our interview, Ali says that many Americans have misperceptions about Iranians simply from a lack of information.
Some of the people in your country, they think we are terrorists, okay? I want to clear something for you people. And even some of them think when we want to go to university, okay, for first semester, We should learn how to use a gun or make a bomb. This is not true. This is not true because, as you can see in Iran right now, if they teach us something like this, now we would rather to use a bomb against the shooters. But as you can see, our hands are empty. Some people in Iran or outside of Iran know how to make a bomb, even when you don't have an explosive, someone like me. But we are not going to use it against the people. Because we believe that the gods don't like this. The God don't like us to kill us. Yeah, exactly. Because I can't hit my people. I can't hit anyone. Okay, but I can hit machine. I can hit the pipes. I can hit the ships. Okay, so this will help us.
Right.
So we should learn how to use it to make a bomb or something like this. I'm agree with this. I'm not talking in this case as all of my people. I'm talking as myself.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I think we should learn this because this is important for us. Because we need this. Because
they have survival value.
See, sometimes the Iran's government, okay, because they have a factory to make explosive. They have factory to make a weapon. They have factory to make a bullet. So when we don't have it, there isn't two way for us. First, buy this. Okay, this is impossible in Iran. As you know, if they catch you with the weapons, they will execute you. Without any lawyer, without any law, they just will execute you because you have gun. If they catch you with a gun. Or if they catch you even with UAV, if they catch you with the UAV, they will take you to that intelligence service of Iran. And I have a lot of friends who create UAV, who was a student of the university, who create UAV, and he was playing with that on his house. They just took him, and it's going to be 3 years at that. I don't know where is he. The Iranian people love the other people. If you just come to the Iran, we will show you. We will show you that the people love to talk with the foreigners. Okay. So I want to say is the Iranian people like all the people in all over the world. We don't hate anyone.
Molly, we really appreciate your going to all the effort to talk to us and get connected with us. I'm sorry it took us so long to get up and running on this, but we really appreciate your sharing your views and your understanding with us so that we can pass it on to our listeners.
That's okay. As I told you, I want peace between Iran and Americas. I don't want to see war.
Yeah.
And I wish it will happen in the next year.
This is my wish.
Well, thanks a lot for talking to us. We'll get back in touch with you.
Okay, thank you very much, guys, and be in touch.
Okay. Good night.
You're listening to an interview between myself and Jerry Swenson and Ali, who is an Iranian who's currently living in India.
As a little bit of follow-up, international human rights organizations estimate that thousands of Iranians have gone missing since the Iranian government launched its crackdown on opposition activists and journalists following the June 12th elections. Eyewitnesses in Tehran say many families are still struggling to determine the whereabouts and official status of their detained relatives. Most of the foreign journalists have been expelled, and the ones remaining are under severe restrictions to report. According to bloggers inside Iran, getting news out is down to citizen journalists, but they are under pressure too. If they manage to avoid arrest and the terrible consequences that would follow, they have problems of uploading pictures and film footage because of internet restrictions and the implementation of draconian laws which can ask service providers in Iran to hand over user data for the last 3 months.
Hmm. So they're close to that here, though, too. I mean, you've got to watch that.
Yeah. Yeah, almost everything you do or say can be tracked. So, yeah.
And I know everybody's on Facebook, but be careful because they own it once you put it up there.
Right.
So if they turn over to the government, them or Google, then we're all just toast.
Right. And we know Google doesn't have a very good record about that, given its policies in China. And
yep.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm a loner, alone with neuroses and hate. Anger is a permanent character trait. My letter bombs are primed and they're ready to send. Would you like to add me as a friend? I'm a wound-up whiner with a fetish for guns. I'm almost 50 and I live with my mum. I hope my nude picture doesn't offend. Would you like to add me as a friend? Add me, me mother says she wish she never had me. Add me, add me, would you like to add me as a friend? Would you like to add me as a friend? I'm a recovering alcoholic, I rarely leave my room. Peeping through the curtains in my dark costume. Would you like to add me as a friend? I'd really like to mail you the picture that I drew. It's Kylie's body, but the head is you. I've asked you 50 times before, I'm asking you again. Would you like to add me as a friend? Add me, me mother says she wish she never had me. Would you like to add me as a friend? Here's a picture of me in my Nazi uniform, doing a trick with an egg that I like to perform at a monster truck rally that my mum and me attend. Would you like to add me as a friend? I've added Britney and Paris and you and Tom. I'm going to find your address so I can visit you at home. I don't like people but I like to pretend. Would you like to add me as a friend? Add me, me mother says she wish she never had me. Add me, add me, would you like to add me as a friend? Would you like to add me as a friend?
It was Chumbawamba. The boy bands have won, and the song, Would You Like Me as a Friend? Anyway, very cool, very nice, upbeat, cheery music from them.
And characteristically for Peace Radio, right?
Yeah, it's summer. It's summer.
Yeah, it is summer.
It's time for a PSA. And the first is that there's still time to share thoughts on local health care. Local citizens still have a chance to help shape the future of local health care by sharing thoughts on services, quality of care, access, and more in an online community health care survey for Gritman Medical Center, which is at www.gritman.org. The survey ends 9 p.m. Tuesday. It's being conducted as part of Gritman's strategic planning process. It's administered and results are tabulated by QHR. Your answers are anonymous. The survey takes about 12 minutes to complete. So again, if you're interested, you can find that survey at www.gritman.org, and you need to take it before 9 p.m. on Tuesday. And secondly, Fraser's fourth annual Sea Country Western and Bluegrass Jam Session is going to be July 31st and August 1st and 2nd at Fraser Park, which is located between mile markers 12 and 13 on Highway 11, which is off Highway 12. So it's just outside Lewiston.
Thank you.
Bring your instruments, acoustics only. Bring your family and friends and a chair and come and enjoy good company and great music.
Pianos are acoustic. Just roll your piano around, Sally. I could do that. We'll put it in the pickup.
Camping spots are available, and concessions will be available Saturday. So for more information, call Linda Beard at 435-4806 or email ljklein62@hotmail.com, or probably you could just Google the Fraser Bluegrass Jam Session. So those are your headlines. Excellent. And I'm guessing we should play another song, so I'm caught by surprise. So we'll put on a song from Dr. Israel Presents Dreadtone International, Patterns of War.
And you are listening to KRFP Moscow 92.5. This is Peace Radio.
This one in a new style, Dreadtone International, unification for the rock the nation.
Make my break. That's the only way. I'll be counting out score.
Who was that, Jill?
That was from the CD Dr. Israel Presents Dreadtone International, Patterns of War, and the song was Counting Wonderful. Out Stones.
Okay. That was great, so, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good lead-in probably to this horrible article that I stumbled onto called How Constant War Became the American Way of Life by Tom Bromwich. And I think those of us in this room and sort of in the peace group and just various have been concerned about the escalation and the sort of first one more than two wars, now three, and sort of how we have, we seem to be sort of moving toward a culture of war even worse than our history has shown. And Bromwich writes, starting his article on quotes from Robert Gates, who got grandfathered into the Obama administration. And Gates said in a speech to the Economic Club of Chicago on July 16th that the central question for the defense of the United States was how the military should be organized, equipped, and funded in the years ahead to win the wars, plural, we are in while being prepared for threats on or beyond the horizon. And Bromwich goes on to say the phrase beyond the horizon ought to sound ominous. Was Gates telling his audience of civic-minded business leaders to spend more money on defense in order to counter threats whose very existence no one could answer for? Giving the public acceptance of American militarism, he could speak in the knowledge that the awkward question would never be posed. We have begun to talk casually about wars, plural, and this should be surprising for several reasons. To begin with, in the history of the United States, war has never been considered the normal state of things. For two centuries, Americans were taught to think war itself an aberration, and wars in the plural could only have seemed doubly aberrant. Younger generations of Americans, however, are now being taught to expect no end of war and no end of wars. And it's horrible, horrible to contemplate. He ends his quite long essay, and I would really recommend listeners to find this. Its title is How Constant War Became the American Way of Life, mm-hmm. by David Bromwich, Bromwich. I found it on Alternet. And he ends his essay by saying, the future wars of choice for the Defense Department appear to be wars of heavy bombing and light to medium occupation. The weapons will be drones in the sky, as we talked mm-hmm. about earlier, mm-hmm. as we spoke with Kathy Kelly
Disembodied war.
And the soldiers will be, as far as possible, special forces operatives charged with executing black ops from village to village and tribe to tribe. It seems improbable that such wars, which will require free passage over sovereign states for the Army, Marines, and Air Force, and the suppression of native resistance to occupation, can long be pursued without de facto reliance on regime change. Only a puppet government can be thoroughly trusted to act against its own people in support of a foreign power. Mm-hmm. Such are the wars designed and fought today in the name of American safety and security. They embody a policy altogether opposed to an idealism of liberty that persisted from the founding of the U.S. far into the 20th century. It is easy to dismiss the contrast that Washington, Paine, and others drew between the morals of a republic and the appetites of an empire. Yet the point of that contrast was simple, literal, and in no way elusive. It captured a permanent truth about citizenship and a democracy. You cannot, it said, continue a free people while accepting the fruits of conquest and domination.
while accepting the fruits of conquest and domination, which mm-hmm. we all are doing. The passive mm-hmm. beneficiaries of masters are also slaves. It's
yes.
it's really chilling to think about that, but we, you know, certainly have felt powerless, mm-hmm. and we are also, though, the beneficiaries of this of American empire, because, you know, we can drive around, we have plenty of food, we can...
Mm-hmm. so, we basically feel safe and are safe.
Mm-hmm. 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 But I think this is hard to read and hard to contemplate, but necessary.
So there's Sally's light reading right now. No, Alternet's a good resource.
A lot
of it is difficult to read, but it's good stuff.
Yeah.
The Huffington Post is getting a little light and entertainment heavy and mm-hmm. a little crap on their mm-hmm. front page.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Go but green by buying a better SUV.
Right.
Sort of a thing. This uh-huh. is much more politically
Alternet, actually, I get sent to my email and typically mm-hmm. will read two or three articles a day.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
they're very excellent.
It's mm-hmm.
sad but true.
And they mm-hmm. aren't sound bites, so
right.
brace yeah. yourself. They're yeah. actual in-depth stuff.
Can't concentrate on that.
Because what is Paris Hilton doing now?
Click over to Huffington Post and find out. So we're gonna follow this discussion with a clip of Mahalia Jackson mm-hmm. singing down by the riverside and telling us. Ain't whatever. Not going to study war no more. We mm-hmm. aren't going to study war no more. I think we've been studying war. We've been focusing on war. We're a war society, and we need to somehow turn that big machine around. Let's not mm-hmm. study war. Mahalia Jackson.
Gonna lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside.
Is Mahalia Jackson singing Down by the Riverside, and you can find that on YouTube and play it whenever you want, and it's wonderful to watch because she looks just really, really happy.
good message, too. We're going to continue with a good message from another group of women. This group is Code Pink, Women for Peace, wonderful women that get out there and mm-hmm. confront power. They're just great. Their latest letter is very funny, and I think it's real appropriate for the peace women to be reading this one. I got this in my email. It says, "Dear Sally, sometimes men just need a little nudging. We have to remind them to take out the garbage or to pick up the kids from school or to appoint a special prosecutor to investigate torture." In the case of Attorney General Eric Holder, your nudging worked. Your letters and calls telling him, "I got your back," have given him the courage to stand up and start looking into appointing a special prosecutor to investigate torture, even against the wishes of the Obama administration. This is great news, but there's a problem. Rumor has it that Holder's investigation is likely to focus solely on low-level interrogators who went beyond the legal boundaries set by the administration, not the architects of the torture program themselves. Looks like it's time for more nudging.
How come trickle-down works when it's the economy, but not when it's war crimes?
I know.
Why don't we start at the top here?
We're trickling up with that one.
Yeah.
Poor, really.
Trickle hardly ever goes up.
Really. Yeah. Anyway.
But at least it's a start.
At least it's a start, and
so if we continue the pressure, maybe.
Yeah, and get on Code Pink website for the mm-hmm. links, because they have some dandy links and a way to sign a petition and a way to some. I'll give you the phone number to call directly. It is 202-514-2001. And that, again, is 202. If you're driving, don't write this down. 202-514-2001 to call Eric Holder and urge him to assign a special prosecutor and to start with those at the top.
And they made a good point on another station, a national syndicated one. If you fax your senator and representative, you inconvenience their staff more than email or phone calls.
Huh.
So if you really got a bee in your bonnet, go ahead and start faxing. And, you know, plant a tree to make up for it. But they have to actually get up and go get the fax, and it prints out, and it's annoying to them.
Uh-huh.
So,
they might remember it more, too.
If you feel strongly, send paper.
Do that,
too. And faxes go through faster than letters.
Yeah.
I only have fax at work right now, so we can't really do that. But
yeah, me too.
But I noticed my printer at home will fax, so I just got to set it up. And I have free long distance. If people want to come to my house and make calls, I don't care.
We'll just do that, Jill. Your address is?
Well, it doesn't really matter because it's in Plummer and the street numbers fell down. And somebody's not up the signs. Just drive around until you see the Subaru. But seriously.
Yeah. I want to also bring up a wonderful article in the latest New Yorker by Jane Meyer, who wrote The Dark Side. Mm-hmm. And she really is following up on this whole torture issue, too. Mm-hmm.